The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Tina Casagrande for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Walter Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the May issue of Walter Magazine. Let's start off with the Our Town section. This month, enjoy outdoor music, classic fairy tales performed live on stage, food events, and plenty of family-friendly fun. And the photograph just bears description. It is a lovely table with wonderful-looking food on it, a stack of cinnamon-crusted churro rings, a three-tiered shelving of parfait with berries and crumbly oatmeal crisp on top, and a lovely charcuterie board with lots of meats and pickles. It just looks delightfully delicious. Seize the day. Flowing champagne, live music, flaky scones. May is the perfect time to settle in for brunch. And while Glenwood South is known for its nightlife, lately it's getting buzz for its classy takes on this beloved weekend meal. Botanical Lounge hosts a Sunday brunch club where a ticket gets you a complimentary mimosa, all you can eat from their Insta-worthy buffet, think herb-forward, mini quiches, donuts, and fresh fruit, and major day party vibes within a gorgeous setting. They offer specialty cocktails for purchase, too. Our pick, the Resting Peach Face, which is made with Lunazol Reposado, that's tequila, lime, and peach syrup. And this brunch is on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's $32. Botanical Lounge is located at 419 Glenwood Avenue, and you can find more at botanicalraleigh.com. Vidrio offers an experiential Mediterranean spin on the meal with menu items like pistachio, baklava, French toast, and lamb hash with sunny side up eggs. Get a group together to try the tableside brunch punch, a bubbly beverage made with lemon, sumac syrup, aviation gin, and sparkling wine. Their brunch is on Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., and Vidrio is located at 500 Glenwood Avenue, Suite 100, and you can find more on their website, Vidrio Raleigh, that's V-I-D-R-I-O, Raleigh.com. Along with the skyline views at the Willard Rooftop, enjoy an a la carte brunch with creative takes on classic dishes like the Brunchcuterie, a play on charcuterie, I guess, a spread of assorted pastries, fruit, deviled eggs, deli meats, and cheese. For sipping, consider the tableside carafe, a bottle of bubbly paired with your choice of fresh juices. And that's the Willard Rooftop on Sundays from 12 to 4 p.m. They're located at 9 Glenwood Avenue, and their website is thewillardraleigh.com. All right, let's move on to the date book. So let's find out what's going on around town that you can take advantage of. This is Walter's list of things to see, do, and experience this month. Midtown Beach Music is live and back on Thursdays from 6 to 9 p.m. Get ready to groove at this high-energy block party-style music series in North Hills every Thursday from April through July. Midtown Park transforms into a lively hub where locals and visitors alike vibe out while sipping cold beverages, trying out new food trucks, and enjoying the warm weather. There are plenty of bars and restaurants nearby, too. You'll recognize several favorite party bands on the lineup this month, including R&B Motown group Liquid Pleasure, that was on May 14th, but inbound from Detroit, soul group Chairman of the Board on May 21st. I know they're a really popular group. $9 per ticket or $90 for general admission to all 15 shows. And Midtown Beach Music is at 4011 Cardinal at North Hills Street. So that's at North Hills. And you can find more on visitnorthhills.com. Let's see what else we have coming up. We have on May 19th, Pitbull and Lil Jon at 8 p.m. What better way to kick off summer than with the high-energy thrum of a Pitbull concert? The artist is returning to Coastal Credit Union Music Park for the first time since 2022 bringing a show that promises fun, funk, and hip-shaking beats. Joining Pitbull is Lil Jon, a rapper known for popularizing the crunk genre in the early 2000s. Tickets go from start at $55 and up, and the Coastal Credit Union Music Park is located at 3801 Rock Quarry Road. You can find more at coastalcreditunionmusicpark.com. On May 21st at 6 p.m., Palmyra, Virginia-based band Palmyra, will take the stage at North Carolina State University's Centennial Campus as part of its family-friendly Live at Lake Raleigh series. Bring a picnic blanket to lay out on the shore of the lake while you hear their folk rock and Americana sounds. Food trucks will be on site at 5 p.m. before the show starts at 6 p.m. Cost of admission is free, so why not go? Corner of Main Campus Drive and Campus Shore Drive. You can find out more on live.arts.ncsu.edu. On May 24th from 2 to 7 p.m. is the Wolf and Porter Vintage Market. Neighborhood bar Wolf and Porter is hosting a monthly All Things Vintage Market on Sunday afternoons this spring and summer. Enjoy a cocktail, try the Velvet Elvis, a specialty drink inspired by the market, while shopping for retro home goods, arts, clothing, and more. Regular vendors include small local businesses like pre-owned clothing purveyors Sage Kennedy Finds, Fetching Vintage, and Viola Lee Vintage, as well as vintage book dealer Smut Stacks. Admission is free, and Wolf and Porter is located at 905 West Morgan Street. You can find out more at Wolf, that's W-O-L-F-E, and Porter.com/events. On May 28th at 7 p.m., the Old Crow Medicine Show. We can't think of a better spot to see the band that coined the state's unofficial anthem, Wagon Wheel, than in the Land of the Pines, a.k.a. the Wooded Coca Booth Amphitheater. Fun facts, the song was originally written in part by Bob Dylan and then covered and re-released by Hootie and the Blowfish frontman Darius Rucker. The Grammy-winning band always attracts a passionate crowd to their Carolina shows with their bluegrass Americana sound. Joining Old Crow is longtime country folk group Marty Stewart and his Fabulous Superlatives. And that's going to be again May 28th at 7 p.m. Tickets start at $41, and the Coca Booth Amphitheater is located at 8003 Regency Parkway in Cary. You can find out more on their website, boothamphitheater.com. Also on May 28th, from 5 to 7 p.m., the Courtyard Wine Social. Head to RTP to enjoy Glasshouse Kitchen's lovely courtyard for this evening wine series, the last Thursday of the month until November. Each session, the restaurant will debut up-and-coming wines from all over the world. Guests will take pours alongside thoughtfully paired, chef-driven hors d'oeuvres from Glasshouse Kitchen chef de cuisine Kyle Fletcher. May's Wine Social will focus on lesser-known rosés like the Veve Rosé Vinho Verde from Portugal. Tickets are $50, and the Glasshouse Kitchen is located at 5 Laboratory Drive in Durham. Their website is glasshousekitchennc.com. And on May 30th, the Inter-Tribal Powwow from 11:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., in partnership with the Triangle Native American Society, Dorothea Dix Park is hosting its annual Inter-Tribal Powwow. This celebrates North Carolina's indigenous communities, the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, the Kohari, the Lumbee, the Haliwa Saponi, the Maharan, the Okanichi Band of the Saponi Nation, the Saponi, and the Waccamaw Siouan. Probably butchered some of those. My apologies. Throughout the day, experience performances led by head dancers Faith Jacobs and Cameron Richardson, beats from Smoky River Kohari Drum, cultural competitions, vendors, and more for a lively day honoring the largest American Indian population east of the Mississippi River. Again, that's on May 30th at Dorothea Dix Park. Admission is free, and it's located on Harvey Hill in the park. You can find out more at dixpark, D-I-X-P-A-R-K.org/powwow. Heading over to the garden section, a pop of May color with gratitude for two of spring's most beautiful flowers. May is vibrant with blooms and fills me with dreams of a wonderful forthcoming season. I've made a point to fill my garden with flowering plants to carry me from late spring into full summer. Among these, peonies are a favorite of mine. Is there a more beautiful flower? Graceful, regal, and floriferous, they're a highlight once the spring bulbs fade. They may be droopy and short-lived, but if you cut them to bring inside, they will be indoor delight for a while. Peonies need cold weather to bloom, so they grow best in colder climates up to our zone 8. They prefer dry conditions with good drainage. There are three main types of peonies: herbaceous peonies, tree peonies, and intersectional hybrids, also known as ITOH peonies. Tree peonies are woody shrubs with larger, earlier blooms that remain above ground all year, while herbaceous peonies die back each year. The ITO peonies are a hybrid of both. They die back every year, but offer a stunning display of larger, long-lasting blooms that you'd expect from a tree peony. I also grow hot red poppies all over my garden for an annual flush. Also known as bread poppies, you might find the seeds on your morning bagel. They offer cheerful, long-lasting, colorful flowers. An added benefit is that the bees adore them and will busily collect pollen from their blooms. After the flowers fade, the seed heads provide food for foraging birds, especially goldfinches. I would grow them for the seed heads alone so I can find delight as the birds alight. I leave the blooms once they're done flowering so the seeds dry up and fall to the earth to reseed for next year. How grateful I am for these flowers. The color and excitement they bring to my garden are the perfect bridge between spring and summer. Heading to the music section, this article is about the School of Rock. Rocking Professor Florence Dore shows the kids how it's done. This article by David Menconi. You could say Dr. Florence Dore leads a double life split between professor and rock musician, except those two pursuits are so interconnected, they're happening simultaneously all the time. For example, consider 12 Great Minds department meeting, a stomp along rocker on Dore's fine new album, Hold the Spark. The lyrics read like ones you might scrawl on a notepad during a particularly annoying work meeting. There should be a class on petty, insignificant battles. There should be a class on what to do when the ref throws a flag. There should be a way to know this is not revolution. There should be a class on what to do to not be a drag. On the road, people really dig that one, Dore says. Anybody who has had a job where you have to cope with the stupidest thing imaginable can relate to it. At this point, Dore pauses to laugh before adding a qualifier. But I do want to say, she deadpans, that similarities to any person living or dead are purely coincidental. Dore has been the rocking professor in the English department at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill since 2010, teaching classes in literature and songwriting. Along with releasing multiple books and albums, three of each, she has toured the world and organized academic conferences about music and writing. Organizing cool things might be her superpower. When the pandemic shutdown hit in 2020, Dore used her connections to spearhead a benefit album. Cover Charge, NC Artists Go Undercover to Benefit Cat's Cradle, featured Superchunk, Chatham County Line, and other local acts, and it hit number one on Billboard Magazine's compilation chart, even though it was a digital-only release on the Bandcamp website. Teaching is an integral part of Dore's artistic life, not least because it expands her network of collaborators. She regularly has students like Mipso Fiddler Libby Rodenbaugh play on her albums, and Dore's May 7th album release show at Cat's Cradle in Carrboro will feature various students as opening acts and collaborators, including the all-female band Juniper and folk rock group Davy Circle, with folk musician Bill Moore as master of ceremonies. Other students will join Dore for cameos during her headlining set. Our band is super excited to play her show, says Warner Vaughn, a senior psychology major from High Point who plays in Juniper. She really is a wonderful professor and musician. In my opinion, a real badass who has done it all. I take a lot of inspiration from her example. Hold the Spark should appeal to anyone who wishes Tom Petty was still around to make records. Equal parts rocking pop tune craft and southern soulful vibes, it's classic rock with roots in the pre-Nirvana alternative rock that made North Carolina a key outpost on the underground circuit. Part of that comes from Doré's drummer and husband, Will Rigby, who's a member of Winston-Salem new wave legends, the DBs. On Doré's album, Rigby is part of an all-star studio cast that includes former Steve Earle guitarist Chris Masterson and REM's original co-producers Don Dixon and Mitch Easter, a North Carolina Music Hall of Famer who contributes guitar here. 12 Great Minds aside, the majority of this album's 12 songs are less autobiographical than invented. Worst Mistake is sung by a protagonist looking back on a lifetime of regret for roads not taken. Can't Come Down and the rollicking album opener Sunset Road were inspired by Doré's travels through America's off-the-beaten-path districts from the viewpoint of imagined characters there. This record reflects a certain irreverence that comes with getting older, because I got tired of talking about myself, Doré says. I wrote a lot of songs, finished 40, and started a lot more than that. I really worked on getting better from a musical point of view, and also to create characters that have nothing to do with me. Not that there isn't any personal stuff. Hold the Spark is the feeling of contemplating your child, growing up and moving on. Doré's own music occasionally comes up during classroom discussion, but mostly as an example of how one might solve songwriting problems, though it does give her credibility with students. At the beginning of her semester, in Doré's songwriting class last year, for example, Vaughn was struggling with writer's block and asked Doré for advice on overcoming it. She told me something that was super funny in the moment, but I remember it now as very helpful, Vaughn says. She told me straight to my face, I don't believe in writer's block. If you don't think you can write, just sit down and write something, even if it's just sentences, phrases, words, anything to get creative juices flowing. You might feel you have nothing to say, but you do. You just have to reach down far enough to find it. It was good advice. Simple Life. Letter to a June Bug from a homegrown Ogden Nash. This article is written by Jim Dodson. My daughter Maggie was born in 1989. It was a year of revolutions, a turning point in world affairs that witnessed the opening of the Berlin Wall, a velvet revolution in Czechoslovakia, and the end of communism in Europe's Eastern Bloc. It also saw the birth of the World Wide Web and the first commercial internet providers, social revolutions of a different kind. Muggs, as I called my beautiful baby girl from day one, was born in the aftermath of a huge snowstorm in Maine. We took her home to our cottage on Bailey Island on day two after her paternal grandparents arrived from North Carolina. One of my fondest memories is of sliding on my rump down the deep snowy hill behind our cottage, my bundled-up papoose clutched to my chest. When I looked at my daughter's tiny face, I swear she was almost smiling. Upon returning home to Carolina, my dad, a veteran newspaperman with a poet's heart, jotted me a note with a bit of whimsical verse attached. He fancied himself, I think, a homegrown Ogden Nash. Sadly, I can only remember the opening lines of the ditty, but I kept it in my office desk forever, until it apparently migrated into attic boxes stuffed with half a century of manuscripts, letters, and correspondence. Someday I hope to unearth it. In the meantime, here's the bit that I recall. Advice from a happy grandpa. There's nothing in this whole wide world as precious as a baby girl, who someday soon will surely be a child as happy as can be. Your job, my son, is to take her hand at which point my memory fails. When Maggie and her husband, Nate, visited us in the autumn of 2024, she graciously offered to plow through my mountains of archives and work papers, giving me hope that she might find my dad's wise little verse. Instead, she found a pile of letters from my early career that included an unopened one from legendary The New Yorker magazine editor William Shawn. In it, he complimented me for an investigative piece on a forgotten African-American community I'd written for the Sunday magazine of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, where I was a staff writer. He'd read it while waiting for a plane home to New York from Major League Baseball's spring training in Florida. He also wondered if I had an interest in writing for his magazine. I laughed at this discovery because my career ambition in those early days was indeed to someday write my way into The New Yorker. My daughter was incredulous. "Dad," she playfully chided, "how could you have not opened this letter?" Sheepishly, I explained that I had a habit in those days, and even today, of setting aside important letters to read and properly answer later. "I probably just put it in my cluttered desk and forgot about it," I theorized. "Crazy, I know." But perhaps, I added, my mistake was a perfect, unanswered prayer. If I'd achieved my ambition to work for The New Yorker, I probably never would have burned out covering crime, politics, and racial justice in the so-called New South. I might not have fled to a winding trout stream in Vermont, where I'd become the first senior writer of Yankee Magazine, marry her mom, build a gorgeous house on a forested hill in Maine, and become the father of two beautiful babies. Moreover, I might never have also found my way home to North Carolina, where I've written a dozen books and helped start arts and culture magazines that are thriving today. Last May, we were thrilled to learn that Maggie was pregnant with our first grandchild, a baby girl due on Christmas Eve. June Sinclair Prescott arrived 7 days early, weighing in at a healthy 9.9 pounds. I immediately nicknamed her Junebug, because they are said to bring good luck, and my spring garden is always full of them. Maggie's mom and my first wife, Allison, flew to Los Angeles first to be with mother and baby as they got better acquainted. The plan called for Nana and Pop-Pop, a.k.a. Wendy and myself, to follow in early January. Unfortunately, a powerful ice storm struck the day before our flight was to depart. A flow of adorable photos and videos of Junebug had to suffice. In half of them, she appears to be smiling and even belly laughing, like her mama at the same age. 2 weeks later, we tried again. This time, it snowed 13 inches on the eve of departure, and thousands of flights up and down the East Coast got canceled, including ours. The day after the big snowstorm, shades of Maggie's own birthday in 1989, the sun popped out, and I stepped outside to fill the bird feeders and think about my spring garden. An old idea came to me. Pushing the snow off my favorite wooden chair, I sat down and jotted a letter in light verse to my new grandchild, like my father, the homegrown Ogden Nash, who preceded me. I also asked the artist Harry Blair, my good friend, to illustrate it. "Dear June Bug, someday, while you are still a tyke, I'll take you on a wondrous hike to see the world from on a hill and all the places that will fill your life ahead with joyful things, like winter snows and golden springs. For nature is the ideal guide to leafy paths that cannot hide the glory of a world that's wide, with loving souls so full of grace who'll help you find your perfect place to live the life your heart desires with faith and strength that never tires. With my love forever, Pop Pop." Our third effort to reach Los Angeles proved a charm. We took the illustrated verse, lots of cute new baby clothes, and a lovely Swedish bear to finally meet our beautiful new grandchild. All we did for five days was rock, hike, hold, cuddle, feed, and play with Junebug and her mama. Like her mother, Baby June was born at a moment of revolutionary change and turmoil across the planet, but I have a feeling that our laughing June bug will bring good luck and happiness to anyone she meets on her life's journey, just as her mother has. A poem entitled Spring Storm by Maeve Fox. I'm lulled by the sweet, thick smells of late spring. As the temperature dips like a sparrow, leaves turn their bellies up to the coming storm. Pouring rain sweeps in for a few precious minutes, carrying the sky's booming voice, flashing temper, leaving in its wake the weight of humidity, flowers opening to drink deeply their gifts from the sky. Within the span of an hour, all evidence of the storm will be gone. Sidewalks bone dry, leaves no longer subjugating to the sky. Once again, I am enthralled by the sweet, thick smells of late spring. To the nature section, it's easy being green. Carolina anoles are delightful lizards with some cool characteristics. Words on photography by Mike Dunn. And there are some really cool photographs, close up of a Carolina anole on a leaf blade, bright green with its eye, one eye just staring out at you. Another picture of a green anole displaying its dewlap, which is a half moon shaped protrusion out of its neck that's like a purpley pink with white dots all over it. And lastly, an anole that is a juvenile and looks like the color purple, perhaps, on a black-eyed Susan. All very close-up pictures. Very, very beautiful. For many years, I had the pleasure of being one of the judges for the annual photo competition sponsored by Wildlife in North Carolina magazine. Each year, we reviewed a few thousand photos submitted by photographers of all ages from across the state. Without fail, we would have had some high-quality images of a particular lizard that always ended up in our final choices, the green anole, Anolis carolinensis. Carolinensis? I'm not good at Latin. I think the reason they're photographed so often and so well is that they are charismatic little critters. They can change colors from a vibrant green to a subdued brown. Their eyes can move independently, unlike our other lizards, and they are common in our area. They also tend to act in a curious manner that seems like they are engaging with us rather than darting away the instant they see us. Green anoles, which are sometimes called Carolina anoles, are the only native anoles in the continental United States. A cousin, the brown anole, was introduced into Florida from Cuba and islands in the West Indies and can be found in some North Carolina counties. That one cannot change color and is brown or grayish black with more distinctive patterning than the green anole. Our green anole is widespread in the Southeast and can be seen in North Carolina from the foothills to the coast. Sometimes called the American chameleon because of their ability to change colors, anoles are not related to true chameleons. In fact, they are more closely related to iguanas. Scientists have studied the mechanism of their color change, and it is quite complex. That's actually all the time that we have for the Walter magazine today. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Tina Casagrande, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.